damn night.
All right, so welcome to another episode of All Damn Night, the only music history podcast in the world.
It's got to be.
The best.
Yes. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, yes.
Yes, hell yes. Yeah. I am your host, Brandon Richardson, with my co-host.
Resident expert, Sean Demers. Thank you for having me back.
Most expert of resident experts. Always glad to have you, Sean. So what we usually do here, we have no particularly unique qualifications, but we talk music history, hang out, have a couple beers, chill, and talk about music. Chill is what we like to do mostly, right?
Well, it's the podcast to party to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, chilling and partying kind of go hand in hand.
T-shirts right? Coming soon with that slogan.
Yeah, chilling and partying.
So what we usually do is talk about a story from music history, and I'll kind of take a story and research it, write it out, and tell it to Sean, who doesn't know what we're going to talk about, and we hang out and talk about it. But this week, the script has been flipped, and we've done this before.
Once again, the script has been flipped.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Sean,
you better watch it, man. You're going to be out of a job.
I know. Competition breeds innovation, though. So, well, Sean's researched a story. He's going to hit me with it this week, and Mr. Demers, take it from here.
All right. So, the year is 1953.
1953.
The CIA and French Investigation Bureau are assisting in an interagency deep cover operation in northern France. Rich playboys have congregated from all over the world to partake in the festivities offered by the underground casino, backed by hundreds of millions of dollars of drug and terrorist organizations' accumulated cash. The game is high stakes. The game is rigged. The game is Baccarat.
Is this a Steve Martin movie?
It's Three Amigos? Yeah.
This really happened?
Well, history is factual, my friend.
Yes, it is. So. And sexual.
And very repetitive.
Yes.
Which kind of, yeah, anyways.
If you were expecting to learn anything or have your kids learn anything, well, just have your kids not listen to this at all, but if you were expecting to learn anything, yeah, elsewhere.
Well, I wouldn't say that. This is a good, it's not reading rainbow status.
No, yeah, well, that's not fair. We can't compare ourselves to LeVar Burton.
Definitely.
No, he couldn't even see it. He flew a spaceship. Amazing.
So I saw this meme about Miss Frizzle, like, what if she was just a crackhead who wasn't a teacher, and she just kidnapped kids and got them all
drugged. I'll tell you, I'm going to break down the truth about Miss Frizzle right now. She actually, her dad worked with the CIA in northern France in the early 50s.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, don't give the story away.
Oh, sorry.
All right, okay. So anyways, here we go. So I'm going to take us back in time, if you will allow it.
Like the magic school bus.
Let us begin our evening with a drink, shall we?
Yes.
Order what you want from a veteran barkeep whose repertoire not only includes the classics but the ability to improvise and match a suitor to their tastes.
Does this mean like a guy who was...
Not a dive bar.
No, I'm saying like a veteran bartender. Does that mean like a guy...
Multiple generations.
Who like was at D-Day and he's serving up whiskey sours now? I don't feel like I should be making him drinks.
Veteran bartender learned the craft from his father.
I see.
And his father before him.
Okay.
So... The keep is surrounded by relatively ancient hardwoods, gilded in ivory and gold.
Ooh.
The velvet and linen curtains are smoky and fringed with gold thread.
It's like a P. Diddy video.
It really is, but in 1953. While we pick our poison, a seemingly out-of-place man approaches the bar in a rush and bumps it with his body to stop his own momentum. He is to the point and short with the conversation. Hypothetically stabbing the barman's ears with gin up.
Huh, okay.
Paying no mind.
Archie Bunker approach.
Yes. <yeah. laughs> Paying no mind to the suspiciousness of the man's condition and demeanor, the barman grabs the glass and bottle without shifting an inch or breaking eye contact. But the mood hasn't shifted either.
So this is like a 1950s northern France roadhouse.
Decadence, though.
But with decadence, like Moulin Rouge combined with Early House.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
Classy. So we are at an event for the ages.
Are you saying Roadhouse wasn't classy?
I'm saying that Roadhouse, I recently saw it in my mid-20s, late 20s,
Okay.
And I...
And let's tell... Why don't we... tell us, Sean, how Roadhouse has changed your life.
So I thought that working security at a concert venue and bar was just a mundane blue-collar, you know, had to go to work to pay the bills, put food on the table. That is pre-Roadhouse. Right, right. After seeing Roadhouse... And after quitting, yeah. I'm thinking about going back into the business.
Makes you a Ronin.
It really, really does, man. Yeah. Like, oh my God. Like, I didn't realize how cool it was to be a bouncer. And not only that, to be able to
be able
to rip someone's throat out with single thrust.
Easy.
Oh man, if I could learn that craft.
Five, sometimes six nights a week.
My foes would be shaking in their boots.
So are there any bouncers at this Northern Bar?
Well, there are, but see, opulence floods the sensory system.
It sure does.
Class and sophistication is on display from the patrons prancing around like peacocks. Though, one can easily tell who is putting on a show with flashy clothes, stones, and women who are obviously uninterested in their companions' personalities. There are gangsters in modern attire that is unnecessarily loose. There are old money, stuffy, wrinkly, and confident individuals. And there are new money newlyweds making everyone uncomfortable.
Yeah, they do that.
Not only with their public displays of affection, but with their cheap taste in cars and watches.
Terrible.
Sporting Lamborghinis and Rolexes instead of Aston Martins and Omegas.
Gross.
Disgusting.
Can't stand it.
It's a good thing that Baccarat is a game of chance.
Thank you.
Not anything like the player versus player situation.
I'll tell
like
you right
poker.
Now, a world without Baccarat is not a world I want to live in.
Absolutely not,
no,
man.
No.
We're talking about opulence. We're talking about champagne flowing like wine.
Yes, yes. Where the women flock like the salmon of Capistrano. Absolutely.
So the whole point behind this is that it's a good thing the game is Baccarat, because we would have been able to tell the poker tell immediately from these individuals.
Okay.
They're not professional gamblers. They are high stakes, high risk individuals just looking for thrills and to get
people with money to burn.
Money to burn. Yeah. Deep pockets. But hey, this is Europe.
Gross.
So what are we doing here anyway at the casino in the north of France? Have you decided what to order from the bartender? How about I make him a suggestion for you, Brandon?
Budweiser. No, I'm just kidding, of course.
Well, how about you take my lead on this one?
Okay.
And go with a Vesper Martini.
Three
measures of Cordons. Well, that's a different episode. Three measures of
Coming
Cordons.
Coming up soon.
Three measures of Cordons, one of vodka, half a measure of Kino Lille. Shake it very well over ice until it's ice cold, then add a large, thin slice of lemon peel. Unfortunately, though, your order is interrupted by a drunk Scottish
Damn
man.
It.
He just busted out of the Baccarat tournament, insisting, ready for this, on having his martini made with vodka and blabbing about his recently obtained 00 status.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, I haven't been out in months without this happening.
So,
this exact thing.
Are you ready for this? That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We are in the thick of the plot of Ian Fleming's first novel, Casino Royale.
Oh, shit. Cool.
And if you're anything like me, you're itching for your James Bond fix with an E.
Oh, wow.
Since it
brings
has
a little
been,
color to my
since,
life with a U.
So it's been 2 years since the release of Spectre. So let's get amped up about the recently confirmed new James Bond with none other than Daniel Craig as
007. He does a good job.
Yeah. He does a good job. And in my humble opinion, is
Your
the
humble
best
opinion?
Humble,
like the space?
Humble, well, in my telescopic opinion,
wow.
He's the best Bond since Sir Sean Connery. Which is a great name, by the way.
No, yeah, I think you're right. I think he does a better job than Pierce Brosnan.
And I think he
did a good job. Like, I think Pierce Brosnan did a pretty good job.
Pierce
like,
Brosnan is weird, though.
Yeah, no, he's a weird dude. He's like Val Kilmer playing Batman.
Yeah.
He's like, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, well, it's better than George Clooney playing Batman.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I
At least Val Kilmer was, you know, front man of the Doors.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I would rather hang out with Val Kilmer than fucking Jim Morrison, I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, talking about lizard kings and shit. Yeah. Shut the fuck up, Jim. Up,
dude, put your dick away and fucking front band for a second. You got an awesome band and you're just going to write shitty poetry and die in France. I don't care.
Fucking hippies, man.
Yeah, if you're waiting for the Jim Morrison episode, I mean, we'll do it at some point.
We'll do it, but we're going to talk about the keyboard player.
We're going to talk a lot of shit. Yeah, we're going to talk about Ray Manzarek.
So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the music of James Bond.
There's two versions going for you at the same time.
So we're going to cover a lot of material here over awesome. A few decades span, so keep up, please. Yes.
If you don't, I swear to God.
Cut off. You're cut off from the podcast game if you don't keep up. Anyways, it all started in 1953 when Ian Fleming released his first book of the James Bond series, Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. Since then, the Bond character has been adapted for TV, radio, comic strips, video games, and blockbuster films. Right. The Bond franchise is massive. According to Wikipedia, the most reliable sources, the films are the longest continually running film series of all time.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Really?
Engrossing over $7 billion to date.
Even longer than Fast and the Furious?
Yes. Believe it or not.
Wow.
This makes the series the third highest grossing film series in the world, just behind Harry Potter and the Marvel Universe. Which, quite frankly, I could give two shits about.
I guess I shouldn't be, but I am surprised that Harry Potter is ahead of it. I shouldn't be, but that does, if some of you asked me on the street, I would think James Bond has earned Harry. I know, like, Harry Potter fans are going to
throw another curveball at you. What about Star Wars?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So, up until this last movie, James Bond was ahead so far.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I probably would have said Star Wars because I'm just... But Star Wars, James Bond probably has a bigger...
There's 25 films.
And it's got the... but Star Wars just has that dedicated... Yeah. You don't have don't have a religion started off with James Bond.
Don't pre-sell tickets to James Bond.
No, but I mean, yeah. My stepmom is British and they're James Bond is like... Seems to be like they're John Wayne or something, mm-hmm. where it's like it's to us it's very cool. Obviously, yeah. it's a very
it seems like appealing. It seems like an honor to be able to play James Bond.
I think so.
You
absolutely.
Have to be like an acclaimed thespian.
And I think he's like when you look at it, it's like he's a really accessible. Hero, and he's like
somebody. He's a real person.
He's a real person.
He's a man's man,
and he's not like a like Superman's just boring as shit.
Because he can do everything.
Batman James seems Bond, to hate pussy.
James Bond can. James Bond can die. James.
He
Bond,
does.
Yeah.
He
James
seems
Bond
to hate it.
Well, I mean, yeah.
He seems to like it.
He likes
seems
it.
To kind of resent
but yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Kind of like Arthur.
Like the PBS character?
No.
The little kid that's like a half
is it, is
mole
it
rat?
Arthur? I'm talking about the other British character played by... It was the remake where
Everyone
Russell Brand...
Everyone right now thinks you're talking about a children's PBS cartoon.
Well, anyways, we might as well continue with the podcast.
I really think you should address this Arthur thing before you move on. It's super reliable.
It was like an old movie in the old days about like a Bruce Wayne character from Britain that went around being a playboy, but he didn't care about women. All he did was dispose of them, James Bond.
In that PB. I've seen the cartoon Arthur before, and
no, not the cartoon.
No, in that cartoon he's fucking everybody. He's fucking everybody all the time, dude. And then just takes him out back and kills him.
And he moved to...
all time.
He moved to California so he could legally give people AIDS and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But totally anyways, cool. So, of course, with the adaptation of Fleming's characters to fit the big screen, came a need for high production value with theme songs and scores produced and performed by the world's most talented and relevant A-list musicians. Yeah. Beginning in 1962, when Fleming teamed up with Harry Saltzman and Albert R. Broccoli, the owners of Ion Productions, they put together a blockbuster that some say cannot be beat to this day. With car chases, gunfights, evil villains, over-the-top theatrical plots, centerfold damsels in distress, and charismatic leading men.
Right.
Not to mention a revolutionary idea to have extremely talented composers produce songs to be performed by top-tier orchestras. The iconic James Bond theme was born.
So this is the... And what movie... What's the first movie? The very
Goldfinger.
First movie? Goldfinger is the very first Gold...
James Bond movie? Dr. No.
Dr. No is the very first
Sean Connery, yeah.
Okay.
So written and composed by Monty Norman, this almost perfect theme song was designed to be the theme for Dr. No. The theme's true author had been somewhat of a controversy over the years, though. Even up until 2001, when Norman received a £30,000 compensation from the Sunday Times newspaper, who claimed the original idea was John Barry's, the leader of the prestigious orchestra that performed the song.
He didn't write it,
but he performed it. Although Barry did work on almost all of the Bond films, and we'll get into that later. So Norman and Monty worked hand-in-hand for the first two films. But then in 1964, the magic really started to happen when Barry took over the reins and responsibility. In addition to the James Bond theme being used for the title and action sequences, Ion Productions brought in a dead ringer of a star for the now gratuitous opening credits. Shirley Bassey. Emerging Welsh singer. It hit number 21 in England and 8.
Oh, she's the girl that sings it?
Sings it,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah.
It hit number 21 in England and 8 in the U.S. top charts, and hit number 53 for AFI's most influential movie soundtracks of all time, which is, you know...
And she's got a great voice. Yeah.
So the new method was an immediate success and grew the franchise into a new genre altogether. The music industry. So alongside the releases...
If there's anything better than the movie industry...
It's the music industry.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the movie industry, as evidenced by Harvey Weinstein, straight up, a bunch of good, hard-working people who want to do the right thing. So when you merge
career employees as well.
Family
people.
They
don't bounce around.
They care about people.
Right.
And well, I think you could say the same for the music industry.
No.
I
can't. But
damn. Oh, that's why we have a podcast. That's right. Because the music industry is horrific and drives people insane.
Okay, modern music industry has gone to shit.
Oh, it's been insane since, like, that's why fucking Mozart's dad was hauling him around.
That's
in an ox
very
cart
true.
Making
it's
him
always
play.
Been insane.
It's always been nuts. Yeah.
Oh, man. But anyway, so it touches so many different people deeply, the music industry. But what more
so does Hollywood, but in a different way.
Right. But how could you affect someone's emotions harder than through music? Through them seeing it and experiencing
great
music alongside of it. So, alongside the release of every movie since Dr. No, there has been a parallel single. Although it has been on several different major labels, the songs are huge sources of revenue. Record companies actually fight and bid to have the rights to the movie soundtrack. Capitol Records.
Right.
There's only been like five or six because there's only that many high-budget record companies.
Right.
But still. Shirley Bassey saw an instant success and had not been appreciated overseas in America up until the 1964 film. When asked about the experience, she humbly said, "I suppose I should feel hurt that I've never been really big in America on the record scene." On the record scene. But
you mess it up with Shirley Bassey.
But
she's gonna sing our podcast.
So let me start this over. "I suppose I should feel hurt that I've never been really big in America on a record scene."
You've been big to us, Shirley.
"But concert wise, I always sell out."
Oh, yeah, the people in Gary, right. Indiana. Right. Wait for Shirley Bassey to come through.
Spoken like a true member of the Bond production.
For sure.
Oh, my God. So, Shirley.
But you know what? Like, I was just thinking, you were saying Star. What was the other? There's.
John Williams did Star Wars.
Right. What was the first two movies? Harry Potter and.
In the Marvel stuff. Like. The Avengers.
Well, I would think like the first, at least the top five movies, because Star Wars is such a...
Star Wars is
four. You associate Star Wars with so much with the music, just like you would for James Bond.
Right, and
like,
Indiana Jones, too.
Indiana Jones, right. Like, it became, I guess in that time period, it became... Because I guess you could say the same thing about, like, certain songs, like maybe, like, Yellow Brick Road, or, like, Hills Are Alive, like, The Sound of Music, like, being associated, but, like,
incredible,
not...
or Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, like, there's several songs that you could, like, associate with that movie, but I don't think it had the, like, I don't, those also had, that's like a musical. And this isn't a musical. This is just a movie.
This is an epic movie that
needs... This is just the first one.
This is the first time they brought in a singer.
Right.
Yes. The third film. So, Goldfinger. Shirley went on to have an interesting life, including becoming a tax exile and without the ability to work in England for 2 years. But that would not stop her. As she came back to the franchise to perform two more themes... Diamonds Are Forever in 1971 and Moonraker in 1979. The world had spoken, and she will forever be eternalized as possibly the greatest Bond musician ever.
Yeah.
Although she's not my favorite.
I would have a contention about who the greatest Bond musician ever is. Right. It may not be
who you think it is after hearing this episode.
Okay, and I respect that. I'll tell you right now at the beginning, I think I know who my most talented Bond musician is.
So Shirley Bassey was great. A talented musician on the stage cannot be beat. She is the Bond singer. But she didn't write any of the songs.
Yeah.
So, you know, who did is Barry. So
it's a Barry Bassey compilation.
It's a Barry Bassey
classic. Barry Bassey.
Yeah, definitely. So she will be eternalized forever as the greatest Bond musician, but she's not.
That's the only way to be eternalized. To be fair, you can't be temporarily eternalized.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I guess if you did like an etching, it would melt and fade over time.
It's not
but if you carve David out of marble, it's going to stay there for all eternity.
Which I'm planning on doing after this podcast.
You know, count me in.
So what... Okay.
What's on your mind, man?
No, I'm just wondering how this is going to end up. So what's next in this progression here? Because...
Well, we're going...
Without foreshadowing too much, I will say that... If you know anything about the Bond music catalog, there is a name that would probably jump out more to you than most.
Yep. Yeah.
Looking at the songwriting.
Well,
credits.
Let me stop you right there.
Okay, and I'll stop right there.
There are two different, if not three or four different generations watching Bond. So remember this.
Absolutely. Okay,
and
that's a very good point.
Remember that we're taking... to answer your question, we are taking three avenues of discovery in this episode.
See, this is why I like Back to the Future, because it's just Huey Lewis and the News. That's all that there is. No, okay.
So when they go back to the future in the second one, doesn't make any sense.
No, yes, it does. Huey Lewis and the News ties it all together.
You
listen to Sports in conjunction with
Sports is actually a great album.
They're a killer band. Okay. I'm Huey Lewis, and you've heard the news. Go check them out. Working for a Living, YouTube that shit. It's a great song.
Hip to Be a Square.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Ghostbusters stole his song.
Really?
Yeah, he sued the guy that wrote Ghostbusters. It's the exact same song as New Drug. I Want a New Drug.
Yep, okay.
Anyways, we'll do a podcast about that.
If this is it, oh my... Huey Lewis definitely deserves some podcast.
Absolutely, I fucking love Huey Lewis.
Duly noted. Okay.
So, to
answer your question, we're taking three separate avenues. Yeah. We just learned about the Shirley Bassey Avenue, where it's the classic Bond theme inspired, you know, arrangements with the and the epic over the top vocals and theatrical plots and stage presence and overwhelming auditory sensations. Next, we're going to learn about this.
Okay.
And then we will get into the future of what the James Bond theme needs, or the theme songs need to be like, and how they are being developed over the days, and in the culmination of all three. So, an elite club had begun to form. In 1965, brought Thunderball, the fourth film, and brought with it none other than the lady killer himself, Tom Jones.
Yes, to sing
the new theme.
Oh my God.
This guy has got like a shed full of panties.
Yeah, I don't think. And it's one of those big sheds that you have to like make on your property to store your private airplane.
Probably goes to self-storage like with those, half of it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the sheds that you store a houseboat in.
Right.
Is like where's Tom.
A dry dock for building ships.
I don't know that there's many people out there who drop more panties than Tom Jones. Yeah, that's awesome, man. Like I didn't know that he was involved with 007.
Yeah, on Thunderball. Wow. Yeah. So again, but he only sang it. Another Barry production. So, with You Only Live Twice in 1967, Nancy Sinatra took to the microphone. Shout out to the Sunset Strip episode.
Ah, yes,
our very first together co-host experience. So check that out. It's earlier in the lineup.
It's the greatest podcast you'll ever hear in your life.
Yeah, and it's only getting better.
Until you hear this one.
Until you hear this one, right. I don't know. The Johnny Cash one is pretty
good. I'm gonna tell you right now, in all due humility and just straight up being real with everyone out there, this is just humbly, this is the greatest podcast that's ever been done in the history of mankind. Yeah.
So everybody, Joe Rogan, just, you know, I hope you're listening, and I hope we can have you on the show someday.
I would do that. Yeah. Sure. The rest of it was a joke. Yeah, sure.
So shout out to the Sunset Strip episode. Louis Armstrong is next. And he would play on a secondary theme for On Her Majesty's Secret Service soundtrack. This was an experimental time in the franchise, and sometimes experiments don't work out.
Yeah, critics, I'm not familiar with you, Louis Armstrong.
See, here we go. This is the thing. Critics and fans alike refused to adopt George Lazenby as their new Bond. One film. That's it. One and done. The producers took note and took a step back from the new. They brought back beloved stars Sean Connery and Shirley Bassey once again for a performance they knew would be a hit. Together on the stage and silver screen, they put out Diamonds Are Forever in 1971.
All right.
So now we're going to get into a new era, the 1970s.
Yeah. A hell of an era for film scores.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The 80s is fun, too.
So yeah, definitely the 80s brought the world the gift of reverb.
Yep. Reverb, guitars, Huey Lewis.
Well, we're joking until we actually bring up the name. And then it's like, yeah, no, Huey Lewis was a gift to the world.
He really was.
Brought to us in the early 80s.
It was 70s. Love, Huey Lewis. I don't need to tell you so.
I have a new drug, and his name is Huey Lewis.
And it is totally
the best drug ever.
It totally is him to be a square. So the 70s, back to the 70s, please, if you will. 70s was a new start of a new era for both in world history and music.
That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. The winds had shifted and blew in a new way of thinking and entertainment tastes. Change was in the air, and Ion Productions knew it and hired an all-new composer for the new soundtrack, George Martin. Not to be confused.
Oh, what was he gonna say?
With Benjamin Martin, who single-handedly won the American Revolution, so amazingly interpreted by Martin Riggs.
Oh, okay. So the guy that wrote the film score for 007 in the 70s isn't the same guy.
He's not Martin Riggs. No.
Oh shit.
He is not the star.
I really feel like we should start this over. Then I've been working under a false pretense.
So this was, by the way, great movies, the Lethal Weapon series. But
oh,
still,
yeah.
You know, you can't go from You can't go from Mad Max to Braveheart. That's all I'm saying. You got to take a step back.
You can go from...
You can go from Braveheart to Revolutionary, killing it, man.
Yeah.
But you can't go from Mad Max to Braveheart. That's all I'm saying.
Well, he went like Mad Max to... What did he do after
that? He directed
that?
A couple other ones, too.
And then, yeah, I guess there wasn't like a whole lot of time between Mad Max and Braveheart. I don't know.
Well, Lethal Weapon
Waiting
1
angry
was...
emails to roll
yeah,
in.
Yeah, anyways.
Oh, so, Lethal Weapon, yeah.
Yeah,
there
Lethal
we go.
Weapon 1. So, this was the very first time where John Barry had not been part of the experience since his conception.
Barryless.
But honestly, his services were not needed. So who, my friend, would fill in the gaps?
Let's see. I can think
it,
of...
It rhymes with Tall, McKenney, and Dings.
Yeah, I don't know what that...
Paul McCartney and Wings.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I was like, well, that rhymes with absolutely nothing in the English language. Yeah, absolutely.
So in 19... This was, again, 1970s brought in a new way of thinking, and this was the very first time in 1973, Paul McCartney and Linda McCartney composed the entire song alone.
Wow.
And performed it with Paul's all-star band Wings, backed by a full orchestra. Some may say this was the song that was the pinnacle of his career, even bigger than the Beatles.
I mean, it's kind of the perfect song.
It really is. And I consider it to be the auditory form of the greatest acid trip ever.
Oh, well, we haven't even named a song, Live and Let Die.
Well, you know what song I'm talking about. Thundering drums, soaring horns, and piercing vocals give this song a status that maybe only... This is important here. Give this song a status that maybe only one other Bond theme has been able to obtain. The status of independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great song, Independent. So, like, yeah, you know it without the movie.
If you ask the average person, what's Live and Let Die? What are you going to say?
Paul McCartney? Or,
yeah.
Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney song. Yeah, they won't say it's the greatest Bond movie.
No, yeah, they're going to say Paul McCartney song.
Yeah. So the bar had been set once again, but failure was still an option and imminent.
Oh, shit. Shit.
Everybody knows that there's been some terrible Bond songs, but now we're going to get into it. With the 1974 hit, The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, yeah.
In the absence of the miraculous McCartney duo, John Barry's expertise was once again required to fill the giant shoes of Wings.
Hey, can you come back in and replace the Beatles?
Right. Can you replace Paul McCartney? I guess.
I could try.
You know, you better pay me double what you were before.
I can do a better job at half the price.
But joking aside, he did the theme, The Man with the Golden Gun. And it was performed by, again, another Scottish singer-songwriter, Lulu, who her powerful vocals and screaming range gave the theme the presence it needed to come down off the McCartney high. And with the orchestral arrangements of Barry, Lulu was set up for success. It is a typical Bond theme and stays true to the original Monty Norman motif with a growling brass section. It's the original Bond theme, but sung by Lulu, and that's what's so cool.
Wow.
After McCartney, they started to get back to their roots, but then they lost it again. Leaving the 70s behind with a final hurrah, we were gifted the Carly Simon classic, Nobody Does It Better, along with being the most successful Bond theme yet.
Really?
Yes. Was given an Academy Award and Golden Globe nomination for Best Original Song.
Holy shit.
That's what I'm talking about. The world is fucked.
I have no idea.
So, yeah. And if you've heard it, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But it is a great song. And Carly Simon is amazing. You know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, so, she's amazing.
As we move... Have you got anything?
I mean, she's a little vain, but...
She's so vain. Well, no, he's so...
James Bond probably...
I think he was talking about...
About
she
him.
Was talking about Mick Jagger in this
as
song.
Far as
correct?
I thought she was talking about James Taylor.
Could very well be, but that was Carole King, was it not? Well, James Taylor was slaying. Slaying it.
That's what... Yeah, both the fire and the rain, got it.
You He had it all, man.
All.
Him and the weirdo Simon and Garfunkel. The short, weird, curly hair guy. They just, like, live in dirty subways. And they're getting all of the girls.
How do you sing, like, soft acoustic folk songs and just do tons of
tons of cocaine?
How? I don't even understand. Seems physically impossible.
Well, hey, I've seen James Taylor in concert, and second to seeing Guns N' Roses, which we will get into very soon.
That is a big one
coming. James Taylor was the second most professional live performance that I've seen.
Yeah, I that's the first record I remember listening to with James Taylor.
I'm Holy shit, James Taylor fan. He's a great musician. Yes. So as we move into the 80s, we start to get into the stranger side of the music in the final last-ditch effort by John Barry to produce hit tracks for the films. Brought in again for a three-in-a-row string from 83 to 87, following a complete flop, in my own opinion, despite having hit number 2 in the UK charts. Bill Conti's For Your Eyes Only, sung by Sheena Easton, leaves something
what
to be desired.
What an 80s name. It's Sheena awful. Easton.
It is terrible.
You know, the phone call, just like, hey, Barry, I need you to come back, baby. Like,
I won't do it without Sheena.
We got to have Sheena Easton. Sheena Easton is a great girl. It outlined, like, all of fucking L.A. County.
He has a map of L.A. made out of cocaine. I've already done Beverly Hills.
I'm almost to Studio City.
So, here we go. In 1983, Octopussy hit audiences hard from all over the world.
Which is what I plan on naming my first daughter.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The theme, All Time High, was even featured on promotional posters. This, right here, may be one of the most unprecedented moments in music history. I dare you to challenge me. So, okay.
Well, if you want to step up, step up.
Along with this song, the very first opening credit movie music video was filmed. Oh. Despite the dreary song, history was changed and written forever. On a par with Michael Jackson's Thriller music video.
Wow.
All Time High was the first music video to be featured in a blockbuster movie. Again, the franchise set a new standard.
Damn.
So, you know, people don't realize how important and how the James Bond series is and how it's progressed the entertainment, you know, scene.
Yeah, it's been the genesis for a lot of innovation.
Genesis. Yeah. Holy shit, what a good vocab word, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like a musical musician, Barry in 1985 produced another smash hit performed by the epitome of pop icons Duran Duran.
What the shit?
Yep.
Really?
As well as being the final studio work of the famous Fab Five of the band, A View to Kill, again, was nominated for Best Original Song at the Academy Awards.
I mean, you know what? They could do
it.
I haven't heard this song, but
A View to Kill is amazing.
Yeah, I could hear that being a good band to do a Bond song.
It literally blew my mind when I was listening to it. So followed, after this, they were followed by a similar pop-inspired Barry composition with a Norwegian band named Aha.
You're called Aha. Very much looking forward to working with Mr. Barry.
So they were at the helm of the Living Daylights, and they took control of the charts in Europe. It was an epidemic over there. It was ridiculous.
Well, Europe is known for its epidemic.
So anyways, this would be the last work involving master composer John Barry and to be affiliated with the series.
Barry's infamous last hurrah.
You know, this guy was...
He's like the Lou Gehrig of...
He's literally hitting home runs, eating cheeseburgers all day.
What are you thinking, Babe Ruth?
I'm thinking about Axl Rose.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm thinking about him. But, holy shit. What do you think about this so far, though? Because we're about to get into a new era in the time of the James Bond.
I tell you, I had no idea that Duran Duran was involved with this. I didn't realize like how at the forefront 007 was musically. Like,
right.
I know it was
right.
innovative in filmmaking, but I didn't realize it was...
Neither did I.
Yeah, that's a... And I don't know, I'm looking forward to see where this is going. Because I'm having trouble recalling what 90s song came out of 007. So I'm looking forward to this. Let's hear it.
So now, without further ado, we get into the good stuff yet again.
So, Cadbury egg.
And this is the third time we get into the good stuff, like the Cadbury egg. I'm sorry, I just lost my fucking mind.
It's true, man. They're great.
Well, I love those things. There are a few exceptions, of course.
Yeah, but anyway. The caramel ones. I hate
those so, it's all about the cream egg. You can't have the caramel.
Not here to play around.
Jesus. And you can't have pink peeps. They gotta be yellow.
I don't eat those things. My sister loves
peeps. Well, neither can I, but here's the trick. So you take two peeps, put them on a paper plate, and stick toothpicks, like they're holding them.
Like you sound jousting, like a North Korean dictator right
like
now.
Like jousting each other. And you put them in the microwave for a minute, and whichever one pops the other one first with the toothpick wins.
It literally sounds like a North Korean dictator talk.
This is a dog fight.
Sounds like you're talking about
better
people.
Than a dog fight. This is
better than a dog fight. It's even better than watching two dogs kill each other. You know those contests where they have
I
two
support
dogs
the ASPCA,
kill each other?
ASPCA.
Sounds like you do.
In saying that I want to move the betting scene from dogfights to peeps jousting.
I just want to thank you for opening up all of our audience to that point of view. I'm sure it'll be reflected positively in our Patreon account. As it has for Michael Vick.
Well,
it's
we're joking here. We're
Vick.
Saying that.
Are you? It
I'm
seems
not,
like your eyes right. are like a shark. Like there's no emotion in
there. Dude, I'm not gonna lie. Once you get that first taste of blood, man,
it seems like you're the one playing dogs. You have dogs fighting each other.
Well,
like
no, I don't. I don't have fight dogs fight each other. I fight the dog.
I know, but like it doesn't sound like they're pit bulls. It sounds like you're in there fighting.
They're
like
actually
schnauzers.
They're actually like really humans. And they're tied. And
oh, this is fucked up. No. Maybe we should talk about your life. This seems even weirder than the 007.
This is not A&E. This is...
It surely is not. I think you've proven that.
What are we going to talk about next? Scientology? No fucking
thank
you.
I mean, our last episode was like about a guy who like basically tried not to shit himself for a living. So it's pretty clear we're not A&E. We're way better.
Oh man, I hope that the listeners are having this good of a time.
I think so. I can't imagine why they wouldn't be. I can't. So okay, where does this progress to? Where is it? We're what, late '80s?
We're bringing everything together eventually, and talking about where the Bond theme is going, where the music industry is going, where the movie industry is not going.
Mm.
So we're gonna
that's like that's the three prong approach.
So leaving behind the 80s and bringing in a whole new musical production crew yet again, the franchise started to get back to their roots, and this is what I'm all about.
All about getting back to the roots.
All about the roots. With over-the-top productions and scores, 1989's License to Kill came alongside none other than Gladys Knight's final charting solo single.
Oh, wow.
Gladys Knight.
Wow. A lot of, like, what a range of people
that's
to be involved.
What I'm
you have a Beatle, you have Gladys Knight.
Yeah,
you got
Duran
Duran.
Yeah, you got Trilly Basie, like the classic swinging, you know, 40s, 50s. So, Gladys's power speaks for itself. We don't even have to talk about it. She has an amazing volume, but apparently we are going to talk about it.
She has an
amazing volume that the orchestra struggles to keep up with. Incredible backing vocals and, again, growling horns when all put together make up the quintessential Bond theme yet again. Bam.
Way to go, Gladys.
Way to go, Gladys. The 90s. Here we go. Some of my best memories, man.
Really, if you think about the 90s, blue, though, because there was no fucking internet.
Video games sucked.
Video games sucked. There was nothing to do but think about what happened to Kurt Cobain.
So we lived.
Who's
we lived
blowing
in, yeah,
Bill Clinton.
That, and we lived in the woods, and all I did was blow up stuff and
listen
to skewed political views.
Literally, all I did was blow things up and think about how to blow up other things. That was it.
Yep.
And I had a hell of a time. And I feel sorry for kids today that don't get to do that.
That's what I'm saying. Some of my best memories right there in the 1990s. Nobody cared if you blew shit up.
Nope.
And then fucking Unabomber.
I know. And I'm like, listen, I'm just out here having a good time, okay? Right. I'm not mailing it out to people, right.
So anyways,
everybody got so serious.
Back to the lighter side. Let's before we get too carried away. I can't believe I just said that. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance.
We don't
need a press conference to apologize publicly. So anyways, 90s. All right, so you know what?
Who are you people to judge the Unabomber?
You don't know his story. You don't know him.
Yeah, I kind of do. He's a piece of shit.
He was a piece of shit. Right. That is a joke. Anyway, so the 90s brought the first...
AIDS.
Yes.
And
the total first reincarnation of the character of Bond as of yet.
Okay.
And Tina Turner started us off strong with the 1995 hit GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Tina's immaculate, deep-throated vocals played in such stark contrast to the reimagined electronic music sound of the day.
Yeah.
It was featured so predominantly in the film with Q Branch bringing forth such high-tech devices as an exploding pen and an unexpected change in the vehicular tastes of Bond from Aston Martin to BMW.
It took until the 1990s to get to an exploding pen.
But before that, they were already on the moon with lasers. It doesn't make much sense.
That doesn't make a lick of sense.
But it's not about the movies. No, okay, it's about the music and the history. So, GoldenEye, though.
Again, it took them to the 1990s to get Tina Turner?
That's what I'm saying. And Gladys Knight in, like, 89.
Why didn't
like,
you get these guys?
Shit. Like, right after McCartney.
I don't understand.
We're going to end these people's careers with terrible movies.
I understand Duran Duran in the 80s, but why did you wait on Tina Turner until the early 90s?
But hey, that's why it was, you know, that's
Tina
how
Turner
the way it was.
Wouldn't do it unless you had an exploding pin, and they're like, well, we don't have the technology, Tina. You
gotta wait until GoldenEye.
Like, call me when you do.
Yeah, call me when you're ready, Q. Quartermaster.
30 years later,
GoldenEye will forever live in my memory as not only the greatest video game of all time, but the most memorially relevant Bond in existence. Pierce Brosnan is the Bond I grew up with.
Yeah.
So, unknown to many, the title track was actually written by Bono.
Really?
Really?
I didn't know that.
And the Edge of U2.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Bloody Sunday.
Yeah.
Was like their hit that put them over the top in the Ireland. Right?
Yeah.
And then after that, they started to gain worldwide status. They were like a punk rock band back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, like, Sunday Bloody Sunday is like...
The story behind that song is brutal.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like a terrorist act.
And it gets people riled up. When they play that in Ireland,
yes,
holy shit.
But that's a whole podcast in itself. But I mean,
it should be.
Yeah, that's a long-standing, divisive issue.
So, but, back at the farm... Despite the next few films being supremely unimpressive, the music continued to excel above any other soundtrack ever composed outside of the new considered dynasty. Sheryl Crow was next at bat with Tomorrow Never Dies, and it has all the right stuff, let me tell you. Until we get to the atrocious The World Is Not Enough. I can't even tell you how much I hate this song.
Who did The World Is Not Enough?
The title track to the Scottish band's Garbage
is literally
garbage.
Yeah.
The song has nothing to do with the band and is completely out of their genre and comfort zone. Swing and a miss. Oh. At least the orchestra is real, though. So we get away from Tina wanting to do electronic music and exploding pens. You know, Garbage had an actual orchestra.
Right, and just regular
pens.
Which
is what I'm all about. Back to the basics.
Regular straight-up pens.
Yep. But they suck.
Yeah, so. Real regular pens suck.
Regular what?
Once you have exploding pens, regular pens are bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't have any regular.
They're just back to regular.
I would not pick up any pens in my house unless you click it 3 times and spin it,
yep.
And then click it 2 times to turn it off.
Yep.
If you
the
do,
only way.
Yeah. So, still under the direction of the new quote unquote. If you can't see me right now, I'm doing it.
Nobody can see. I don't think you see this. Sean is not. I still haven't gotten this.
No, I still haven't gotten this. No. I cannot understand the fact that people cannot see me.
He's actually been holding
right
a horse pose the entire time where he's in a horse stance from karate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's impressive he's been holding it this long.
But, you know, my legs are tired.
Well, it's.
I've been holding up this iPad for almost 45 minutes.
Testament to the human will.
So, back to where we were talking about. Still under the direction of the new quote-unquote master, David Arnold, who was brought in after Barry left. Three musical powerhouses' careers were ended with the unintelligible and completely unlistenable songs Die Another Day, You Know My Name, and Another Way to Die by none other than Madonna, Chris Cornell, Jack White, and Alicia Keys. Without the extreme production value, they would be laughable.
Right.
And they really would be.
They're not.
It's terrible.
I remember those songs.
And we aren't even going to talk about Chris Cornell because the both of us will get in trouble. All I got to say is selfish fucking rock stars.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So still under the direction. Here. Non drink to that.
Yes.
Still under the direction of Arnold. Excuse me. And even with... excuse me. Still under the direction... I'll edit that out. Still under the direction of Arnold.
It sounds like an 1800s oil mogul is hosting this show. Like, he's clinking his champagne glass and smoking his cigar.
He's not lying. So still under the direction of Arnold. And even with the reboot of Casino Royale... And the new/old Bond portrayed by Daniel Craig came some of the worst Bond and music industry music of all time. Even worse than the 90s.
Yeah, well, leave it to the 2000s to be worse than the 90s.
It wasn't until humanity was gifted the grace of three literal supreme beings. Thomas Newman, Paul Epworth, and Adele Laurie Blue Atkins. And we were introduced to the new and forever improved idea of what a movie soundtrack should be like. Not only was the Bond reimagined for a second time, the gadgets, the dialogue, and the scores were forced to regress to the golden age of classic French horns,
take it back,
pop rock sensations like the Beatles, and Phantom of the Opera like over-the-top lyrics. 2012's Skyfall, with Adele writing and performing the track, yet again set a new height for the bar. She only agreed, though, to the deal after reading the script. So that speaks for the movie as well. The song is the only other besides McCartney's to obtain independent status. But Sam Smith's The Writing on the Wall, still under the direction of Newman, is the only other film score literally to bring a tear to my eye. We need to appreciate how incredible the soundtracks for the 2012 Skyfall and 2015 Spectre are. Both of these songs were like Live and Let Die, in fact written by the artists themselves. They are arranged and performed in a classic style that highlights the ultra clarity of the voice and allows each individual instrument to be heard in its natural timbre. Not only this, both songs won literal armfuls of awards, including Golden Globes, Emmys, Academy Awards, and Guinness Book of World Records.
I guess that's a literal armful, yeah.
As a species, we need to recognize true talent like this. Let us all stop giving praise to cliche fad artists and look to our elders in old days for guidance. Although there were some incredible artists and revolutionary sounds that come out of the rock and roll and punk scenes, we need to appreciate where it all came from. The developmental stages of music are over. In this, the year 2017, 7th year of our Lord, we need to start caring about art. We need to start reimagining new avenues of growth and adapt our music in a way that reflects the old but shows the new.
Yeah, I dig that. Yeah,
we need to be a little more like Bond.
I like it, yeah.
So, what are we going to do here? We're going to order a drink, and we're going to stay up all damn night. Woo! So, Brandon Richardson and Sean Demers is signing off.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for tuning in. Awesome job. Thanks so much, Sean. That was, hope you enjoyed that. That was, shit, man. A lot of stuff that I really didn't know.
Neither did I. Yeah. So, I just thought Live and Let Die was cool.
Cool. I really do get a better appreciation for music delving into these stories. But so I hope you do too. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you get time and want some more of the All Damn Night experience, check us out on twitter.com/alldamnnight, at All Damn Night Podcast. I know these things. It's been a long day. Instagram at All Damn Night Podcast. And alldamnnightpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, comments, show ideas.
Please let us know. We would love to do what you guys want to do.
Sean, if you want to hit them with a little information about the Patreon.
Just check it out. Again, we're still in the developmentary stages of the Patreon page, but as soon as we start to have more time available to do more research, we can provide exclusive content on a paid subscription level. A dollar gets you everything you want.
More money is more time. But then
if you want, t-shirts, everything, it goes up from there. If you want us, if you want to sponsor an episode, hey, let us know.
And we'll help you out. We are here to serve you.
We are here. We are.
So again, thanks for tuning
in. Hypno-toed.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. We will see you next week. And always good having you here on All Damn Night.